Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 26, Text 8. So the verse is not written up today, Prabhu, so I'll just read it and do the translation. Naham Veda Bina Mukta Surya Vabhajuti Muya Musito Varsha Puganan Batahani Gatan Yuta Did not. Aham. I. Veda. No. Abhinir Mukta. Having set. Surya. The sun. Va. Or. Abhyudita. Risen. Amuya. By her. Mustita, deceived. Varsha, years. Puganam, comprising many. Bata, alas. Ahani, days. Gatani, have gone. Uta, certainly. Translation and purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. That lady cheated me so much that I did not even see the rising or setting of the sun. Alas, for so many years I passed my days in vain. Purport. Due to attachment to the goddess, King Puravana forgot his devotional service to the Supreme Lord and became more concerned with pleasing this beautiful young lady. Thus, he later lamented, having wasted his valuable time. Those who are in Krishna consciousness utilize every moment in the Lord's loving service. The translation again, that lady cheated me so much that I did not even see the rising and setting of the sun. Alas, for so many years I passed my days in vain. Om Agyana Timirandasya Gananjana Shalakya Chakshura Militamyena Tasmai Shri Gurave Maha. So this is a pretty amazing section of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And we have to remember something, that actually this tale that's being told by Lord Krishna, narrated here, could equally have a different hero, in that it could feature a queen called Mrs. Puravani. And she may have a toy boy called Mr. Uravasa. The tides could change. The reason why I'm mentioning is that we must not get caught up thinking that this is somehow or other a put-down of women. A lot of these different verses go on about, you know, that association with a woman, and it's so it could be completely different. That wasn't Krishna's intention in teaching this. It's more we mustn't get caught up in this downing. It depicts a soul who's bound up by Maya. That could be male or female. And, you know, it's totally, that personality was just totally devoted to their belly and genitals, basically speaking. And the conclusion is that one who is intelligent, who's actually fixed, male or female, should give up the bad association, become attracted to saintly personalities, and with determination attain full love for God, bhakti yoga, through the process of bhakti yoga. This is what the whole crux of this analogy is about, this story is about. Sometimes within Krishna consciousness, outside of Krishna consciousness is criticized for, you know, demeaning or putting down women. And we don't. That's not Prabhupada's direction, that's not Krishna conscious direction. We are simply pointing out this is an example of how a materialistic person can get caught up by this illusory energy that's put out there by Maya. So in this verse it's also mentioned that this King Puravana, this emperor, was feeling cheated. The lady cheated me so much. He felt cheated. And again, throughout material existence we see so many times it's easy to blame somebody else, isn't it? When something happens to us, it's easy to say, oh God, you know, she made me do this thing, you know. Sometimes we have that in throughout the history of ISKCON and in marriages and so on and so forth, when there may be some sort of a fall down or something then straight away, usually, you know, it can happen that the male will say, you know, oh, it was my wife made me fall down. It's actually blaming somebody else for our own weaknesses. This is not what we should do. No blaming. We can't blame anybody else. Sometimes we see, you know, like I'm doing this preaching at the prison, and today I'm going again to this prison preaching, and it's said that 90% of the prisoners that are in prison believe that they're innocent. You know? I'm not guilty. It's rare that somebody actually says, yeah, I did that. Yeah, it's my fault. It's totally my fault. Now, there's always an excuse. I was insane. For that period of time, I was actually partially insane. I didn't know what I was doing, Your Honour. I don't know what happened. You know, it's not like me. You know, it wasn't me, really. You know, it was actually, it was the intoxicant that I was taking, or the drug that I was taking. That made me do it. But you took the drug, and the drug made you act in a certain way. So we have to take responsibility. We have to take responsibility. And sometimes you even get it that people say, you know, like that character that shot John Lennon, you know, well, you know, the voices made me do it. I was told that I must do this. You know, God made me do it. We have that argument too. God made me do it. God told me to do this horrible thing. So, you know, it's hard for people to actually accept responsibility. So the king here was also saying, see, that lady cheated me so much. I wanted to enjoy with her and she went away. She's cheated me. And now he's lamenting, you know, alas, for many years have passed, my days in vain. Now he understands the real situation. It's his fault. He has to own up. But that's very hard for a materialistic person to do. To own up to something is very hard for a materialistic person to do. Conditioned souls are hard pressed to own up to the misdeeds that they've done. So when a negative thing happens, you know, the first reaction is always, oh, I've been cheated. I was robbed. This isn't fair, you know. But in fact, everything that we experience, every negative thing that happens to us is a reaction from some action that we've performed in the past. Nothing, absolutely nothing, goes without a reaction. So we have to take responsibility. We can't blame anyone and we can't blame God. This is also even within different religious circles. Often people say, you know, why did God allow this to happen? Why did God take my child? Why did God have to allow this accident to happen? Why does God allow me to have this cancer and this illness and sickness? And they blame God. You know, how cruel is God that I have to go through this suffering? But actually, they're just ignorant. They don't understand that actually every action that you've performed, there is a reaction to it. And they're simply getting something from their past. So when a devotee comes to their senses, as the king, the emperor, is now coming to his senses, he's saying, why have I wasted all this time? He sees that his attachment to sense gratification is actually a waste of time. We can really waste a lot of time pursuing sense gratification. It's amazing if you see the materialists, how much time they waste pursuing some little bit of sense gratification. It's amazing. We did it too. We still do it sometimes. So a waste of precious time. The time is our gift, is a thing that we can utilize in Krishna service, as it was pointed out here. Those who are Krishna conscious utilize every single moment in the Lord's loving service. So that's what it takes, to be 100% engaged every single moment in the Lord's service. Not to let mire in one little nook or cranny. So the king is coming to this realization now. But now it's a question of how can we can take a message from this, how can we come to our senses and snap out of this illusion of material pleasure? Because we're still works in progress, all of us. We're all works in progress. So how can we snap out of this idea that material sense enjoyment is something that is worth pursuing? There's two ways, and it's been mentioned right through this whole story that Krishna is telling here. Association and determination. Determination and association. That's the crux of what's being taught here. We have to associate with saintly people, and we have to be determined in our push to achieve the goal. There's a quote here that Rupa Goswami says, "The process of bhakti yoga can be executed successfully with full-hearted enthusiasm." So we have to see the future. When we have enthusiasm for something, you know, when you're really fired up about something, you already see the end product. You already see what's going to happen, and you work towards that. So the end product is that you're going to be with Krishna, you're going to be with his devotees, you're going to be in the spiritual world. You have to foresee that. You have to look to the future. Like when we do projects here in Krishna consciousness, we have enthusiasm for them because we actually see the final product already in our mind's eye. Whenever we did the Moomba floats, we did so many different Moomba floats, just to give you an example. When Balaram and I were figuring out how we're going to do and how we're going to set up and all that kind of thing, we saw it in our mind's eye already, how it's going to be. What colours are we going to use, how we're going to feature Krishna in this way, and how we're going to decorate it, how the devotees, what kirtan are we going to have. So we see this in our mind's eye, and then we work towards it with enthusiasm because we want to achieve that beautiful result. Similarly, yesterday I had a meeting with the Port Phillip Council in regards to the Rathiatra Festival that we're going to have in February. And already with enthusiasm, the enthusiasm starts to well up because they're saying, yeah, well, you know, this is the route that you'll be taking. So in your mind's eye, you already see Lord Jagannath coming down, and you have to have the canopy down here, and then you can raise the canopy up at this part. And straight away, within your mind's eye, you see the canopy going up and all the devotees going, Hariva! You know, because the big chariot, you know. So in your mind's eye, you're seeing this already. And then going down and having thousands of people already worshipping the Lord, standing up to see the Lord and getting liberation. It's a big thing to present the Lord in Rathiatra. Big, big thing, big preaching. And then they were talking about, oh, well, listen, we'll provide the tents and the stage, and I can already see Korma leading the kirtan, and maybe Vyasaki or Gitanjali leading the kirtan, and having bhajans, and we're going to do some plays, and kids getting prasadam. And in your mind's eye, you're already seeing these wonderful pastimes happening. And so you develop enthusiasm to get to the point. So that's the same thing that Rupa Goswami is saying here. With full-hearted enthusiasm, full-hearted enthusiasm, we have to really be convinced that we're going to achieve this goal. So the goal is to be with Krishna, to love Krishna, to personally be touched by Krishna, to associate with Krishna. We have to see that already. Then the next thing is, so Rupa Goswami says, the process of bhakti yoga can be executed successfully with full-hearted enthusiasm, perseverance, you have to stick to the direction that you've made. You have to stick to it. And that can be, you know, sometimes, because again, like I said, we're all works in progress, there may be a fall down. There may be a slip up. You've let mire in. But with perseverance, you continue on. If at first you don't succeed, you try again. You dust off. Okay, so much for that. That's history. Now we go full on. That's how you approach it. So that's perseverance. And then, Rupa Goswami says, you have determination. Determination is you do not give up. You stick with the path. However rough the path is, however difficult it may be, however hard the mind is throwing up so many things, you stick with it, with determination. And Prabhupada used to give that analogy because he was asked, this sex life is so difficult. How do I deal with this? And he went like that. He clenched his teeth and showed his teeth. He said, you grit your teeth and you bear it. So that takes some determination. As they put it in Australia, it really takes some guts to really, really stick to the path. And you go, I'm going to stick to this. That's what it takes. Like an athlete wanting to achieve a gold medal. You know, I'm going to get this thing. You become really fired up. And that's what it takes to defeat Maya. You will defeat Maya. So, then Rupa Goswami says, following the prescribed duties, our sadhana, our dedication to our guru, and also whatever the temple authorities have asked me to do, and association with devotees by engaging completely in activities of goodness. So your whole life is dedicated to just doing good. And that's the message of Bhagavad Gita. It's just being a good person, being a loving person, being a caring person, being a friend to everyone. This is what's meant to be. So these are the processes that Rupa Goswami is pointing out. And Prabhupada mentions a really interesting example of determination in the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita about the sparrow. You've all heard that story about the sparrow? The sparrow is there, and she lays her eggs on the shore of the beach. On the shore of the beach she lays her eggs, and she's very much protected. And the ocean, such a big ocean, the waves just roll in and take the eggs from her nest. And the little sparrow is so upset that the eggs have been taken. And she calls out to the ocean, "Give me my eggs back! How dare you take my eggs?" Now the ocean is so vast, so big, so powerful, that the little sparrow calling out, you see the little sparrow, a little speck in front of this big ocean, calling out to the ocean, "You give me my eggs back!" And the ocean didn't even see her, the personality of the ocean didn't even see her, and just completely ignored the situation. "If you don't give me my eggs back, I'm going to drain the ocean." That's guts. That's determination. That's strength. And so this little sparrow said, "Okay, a little bit. A bit of water. Now the people around her, all the other birds, were saying, "What are you doing? You know, you ignorant fool. I mean, how can you drain the ocean?" No. She was determined. Prabhupada said this little sparrow was determined. She was going to drain the ocean. And everybody else was laughing at her. "You ignorant fool, you can't drain this ocean." "Yes, I will." She had the insight, she had the full-hearted dedication to it. She saw it, gold, she's going to drain it, she's getting her eggs back. And it reminded me, when I read that little pastime about your class, Nandamandir, you know, how you were saying that when you were out there as a monk, celibate monk, that people turn to you and say, "What are you, an idiot or something? What's wrong with you? You know, I mean, don't you want sex life? Sex life is the big thing in this world, you know. But you stay fixed." So that was like this little bird. So then we understand that what happens is that you'll get support. You'll get support. If you have determination, no matter how big the challenge seems, and to take on Maya Devi is a pretty big challenge. If we think that little sparrow of taking the water from the ocean was a big deal and practically impossible to do, us attempting to take on Maya Devi is like a huge endeavour. But we do it. And we stand there and do it. What happened to the little bird? Finally, the word got around in the bird community, and the biggest bird of all, Garuda Dev. Garuda heard about this little bird. His little sister was in so much anxiety and was so determined to drain this ocean, and everybody else was laughing at her, and he said, wait a minute, she deserves my protection, she deserves my grace, she deserves me to help her. And so he came. This is Garuda, the carrier of Lord Vishnu. You know, now all of a sudden the ocean just seems, you know, what's the ocean compared to Garuda? And he said, "Give her eggs back." He goes, yes, I certainly will. And a nice big wave came, gently placed the eggs in front of the little sparrow. Sorry about that egg. And so this is the point that we take, that by association, we can actually defeat Maya. We can actually grow strong. And Prabhupada quotes at the end of that, in that purport in the sixth chapter, he says that God helps those that help themselves. So that's a quote from the Bible. So you'll get, if we're determined to fight our lusty desires, our selfish desires, if we're determined to fight against Maya, then what happens is, number one, great devotees will come to help you. You have no idea who will come to help you. If Garuda will come for a little sparrow, who will come to you in your fight with Maya? You'd be surprised. To the extent even where God will come. God will come to help you. To help you in your mission, in your determination to fight the illusory energy. So this is a really wonderful thing, and that's but the fact remains is that if you are too much attached to sense gratification, then it's practically impossible. The determination will not take place. If you are too much attached, that's from the Bhagavad Gita 244, Bhogeshwari Prasatanam. So if you are too attached, then you can't. So you have to relinquish this desire to enjoy separately from Krishna. So in the purport to that one, in that second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada actually says that when the mind is fixed, really dhira, steady, in the self, in understanding who they really are, that is actually samadhi. Now, a lot of different organizations and different spiritual groups say that the samadhi is some really wonderful, euphoric sort of experience, and the lights go on and you feel really uplifted and surcharged and blah, blah, blah. But actually, Prabhupada said it is simply when the mind is fixed in understanding the self, and that is called samadhi. So fixing ourselves in the service of the Lord, like it says here, a Krishna conscious person utilizes every moment in the Lord's loving service, fixing the mind on the Lord, that is samadhi. So all of us here in Krishna consciousness, every single day of our lives, as soon as we dedicate our lives to Krishna, are experiencing samadhi. Whether it's making a garland, whether it's worshipping the deity, cooking an offering. If we don't allow Maya in, that becomes samadhi. And that is such a wonderful experience. It is indescribable in words. It is so transcendental, it's indescribable in words. So we have to actually constantly be engaged in service to the Lord. And Maya will strike anywhere. Maya will strike anywhere and everywhere. Maya will strike anyone and everyone. She won't give up. Even if you think you're making some advancement after 30 years in devotional service, she'll come along and say, "Oh, you think you're pretty cool, do you?" Oh, God. Dust off again. Start again. Let's go. Keep going. Krishna's like, the Maya won't give up. So we have to be on guard every single moment of the day, making sure that we're fixed at the lotus feet of Krishna. Even Srila Prabhupada. Now you think, and did you see the like Srila Prabhupada, savior of the whole universe? You think, Maya wouldn't attack him. But still, he was on guard all the time. There was one incident actually where Prabhupada was in the early days when he came to New York, and it was early preaching, and the devotees left him in a room with a lady, right? For some reason, some preaching thing, this lady was somehow or other doing something for the early movement. And when the devotees came back in, the male devotees came back in, he chastised his servant. He said, "How could you leave me in the room with this woman?" Not that he was condescending the woman or anything like that, but he understood how powerful Maya is and how Maya can take a person away. So this is even Prabhupada. He chastised, not that Prabhupada would or could, not that, but he's showing the example that even a great devotee has to be on guard. And the Bhagavatam is full of great devotees that succumb. So one thing that I wanted to read, which I don't think has been read yet to the devotees in regards, or the story of Bilva Mangala Thakur, in regards to sensual desires and how to conquer them, I don't think it has been. So I wanted to read just a quick section on Bilva Mangala Thakur. Everybody know who Bilva Mangala Thakur? Great saintly person. He appeared in the 8th century, the Sakha era, in the province of Dravida. and was the chief disciple of Vishnu Swami. So, and Bilvamangala Thakur was the first Shankarite follower before his conversion. He was first a Shankarite follower before his conversion to Vaishnavism. So I just wanted to read his pastime, which is pretty amazing. I hope you bear with me, because it is worth it. It's really fantastic. Born in a Brahmin family in South India, he is said to have been a renowned scholar and lived on the eastern bank of the holy river Krishnaveena in the South India. In his previous life, he was advanced up to the point of Bhava. Okay? In his previous life, he was advanced up to the point of Bhava. So we're light years away from Bhava. Oh, well, I am anyway. But anyway. But in his next life, what does he say? But he was very attracted to sex life. As the Bhagavad Gita states, the unsuccessful yogi, after many years of enjoyment on the planets of pious living entities, born into a family of righteous people, or into a family of rich aristocracy. Hence, Bilvamangala was born in a wealthy Brahmana family, but the sons of the rich sometimes tend to abuse their opulent situation. And thus, Bilvamangala was one such case. He had an illicit love affair with a dancing girl who was a musician and a harlot named Chintamani, who used to live on the opposite bank of the river Krishnaveena, and whom he used to visit every night. He was so devoted to this prostitute that even when he was performing his father's death ceremony, the Shraddha, he told the priests, "Hurry up, hurry up, make haste, I have to go." He finished the proceedings quickly and took some first-class food in a bag and departed. When he came out of his house, it was a terrible stormy night, but this did not daunt the passionate Bilvamangala. He came to the bank of the river Krishnaveena and found no boat. He risked his life to cross the terrible river just to see the prostitute Chintamani. He began swimming across the raging torrent. In the meantime, the prostitute Chintamani resolved, "Oh, it's too late, and raining so hard. Surely Bilvamangala will not come in such conditions." So she bolted the doors and retired to her bedroom. In the meantime, poor Bilvamangala was drowning in the middle of the fierce river. Keeps on going. He desperately grabbed onto what he thought was a big log. And when he finally reached the other side of the river, he discovered that it was actually a corpse. Not caring a fig, he quickly proceeded to the door of his beloved house. But to his disappointment, he found the gates of the prostitute's house were bolted from within. He shouted his name with all his might, but it was of no avail. His cries were deadened by the deafening thunder, boisterous winds and torrential rains which were beating on the windows and the walls. So he was screaming out, but she didn't hear him. What was to be done? Nothing could daunt his morbid passion, which should be satisfied even at the cost of his own life. He was then as a devil incarnate. The walls were too high and steep to scale. The weather-beaten but passionate Bilvamangala made a last desperate attempt to climb the steep wall. Having nothing to hold on to, he seized the tail of a snake which clung onto the wall, and succeeding to leap over, but finally fell heavy to the ground on the other side. The thump brought Chintamani to that spot, so he climbed over the wall, leaped over, it was a big drop, and fell onto the ground. So the thump actually awoke Chintamani. In what was practically a dying condition, he was discovered by his love, for whom, for no sake of a frantic infatuation, he had risked his life. Had she not found him and nursed him, it would have certainly meant his death. She carried him into the room and then nursed him tenderly as he hung between life and death. She, seeing the mad love for her, felt a pinch in her consciousness and reminded him that such an intense love, if offered to God, might lead him to the highest good. When he recovered consciousness, she pitied and abused him for a foolhardy venture, saying, "What a great fool you are. Shame on your learning. I know that I'm always conscious of my own wicked life and profession. Had you been attached to God in the way you love me, you would have been an angel. It sounded like a call of God to Bilva Mandala, who had exited into a circle of hell. The whole face of the thing was instantly changed. So inspired were her words at that great moment. To him, those words of her were not merely a reprieve, but a total deliverance from his hateful life. A restoration that suffused his whole being. Her grim censure proved wholesome to the remorseful Bilva Mandala. So here Krishna is providing the information. Charged with the whole changed his whole course of his life, giving it a swift turn to spiritual channels. With this, she too renounced the world, giving up her fortunes. As such, she became Bilva Mangala's Vatmana Prakasha Guru, or his guru showing him the way to the highest well-being. So not only did Bilva Mangala Thakur take heed of the message that was being taught, Chintamani also realized that actually what came through me is actually the truth, and I should also follow and become a renunciate. The very next day he renounced the world and started for Vrindavan Dham. But even on the way to Vrindavan he saw another beautiful woman, the wife of a Brahmana. So even he's been given instruction, even he's had the wake up call, wake up buddy boy, you know, it's not what it's there for, spiritual life is more important than any material attachment, still, and he's made that vow, the determination, still, Maya comes along, the next day is another pretty lady, and wham, he got him again. So he was again attracted, and he began to follow her. That woman belonged to a respectful family, and Bilva Mandala came to their house. The woman went to her husband. This man is following me. Ask him what is his idea. In other words, why is he following me? The Brahmana addressed Bilva Mangala. My dear sir, you appear a very nice gentleman. From your appearance I can understand that you come from an aristocratic family. Why are you following my wife? Because I want to embrace her, said Bilva Mangala Thakur. And this is the Brahmana, right? Come then, embrace her, the Brahmana announced. Then he told his wife, here is a guest, and he wants to embrace and kiss you. Decorate yourself nicely, so that he can enjoy. The wife followed the instructions of the husband, and when Bilva Mangala came before the woman, he again realized what a fool he had been. He resolved to make a permanent solution to his problem. Now, this is not recommended for all the devotees, okay? And he resolved to make a permanent solution to his problem and asked the Brahmana lady, my dear mother, would you kindly give me a pin from your hair? Srila Prabhupada comments in this connection that when one addresses a woman as mother, there is no question of a sexual connotation. That's why we call the ladies Mataji. It's quite bona fide to call. It was interesting, just as an aside, one time I was on a preaching program, and there were some Indian people there, and I was a young devotee, and I got introduced to this so-called Brahmana's wife, you know, who was a businessman, and I mean they had nothing much to do with spiritual life, and I kept on calling her Mataji, you know. Oh yes, Mataji, yes Mataji. She turned to her husband and said, does he think I'm his wife, I'm his mother? So we have to be mindful who we call Mataji, because sometimes we get into this habit, you know. We call the ladies Mataji, and so this lady just didn't know what was going on. He's calling me his mother. What's the problem with this bloke, you know? So we have to be careful with that. So anyway, Prabhupada says, address a woman as mother. There's no question of any sexual connotation. Although the lady knew not why he asked for this, she agreed, and taking a pin from her hair, she handed it to Bilva Mangala. Bilva Mangala took the pin and pierced his eyes, saying, these eyes are my enemy. So we don't do that. You know. He then continued towards Vrindavan and gradually reached the holy dham. As he neared Vrindavan, a young boy took his hand, because now he's blind, and began leading him to Vrindavan. He realized that it was Krishna. As they got nearer to Vrindavan, Krishna pulled away his hand. I have to go now. My mother is calling me. If I do not go now and take my lunch, she will be very angry. No, you cannot go, Bilva Mangala Thakur said. I won't let you go. But Krishna got away. He somehow managed to pull his hand out of Bilvamangala's. Bilvamangala called after Krishna, "You can pull your hand away from mine, but you cannot take yourself from my heart. I imprison you there." So Bilvamangala has so much love for Krishna. "Who are you, my dear boy?" Bilvamangala inquired. "I'm a cowherd boy," Krishna replied. "If you like, I can supply you your daily quantity of milk." Bilvamangala Thakur agreed, and from then on, Krishna would daily bring Bilvamangala his milk. He remained at Brahmakund for 700 years performing tapasya, when he would sing his sweet songs about Krishna, and that singing would drag Krishna to that spot where he was singing. Krishna would not be able to concentrate on what he was doing, and he would leave everything and go to where Bilvamangala was singing his glories. Krishna would come and sit in front of him and listen to Bilvamangala, and would realize that, and Bilvamangala would realize that Krishna had come to listen to his singing. And Bilvamangala would try to come closer and touch him or grab him, and Krishna would withdraw and try to get away. Bilvamangala would get up and try to run after him, but being an old man and blind, how far could he go? However, Krishna could not stay away when Bilvamangala sung his sweet poetry. So then he created the Krishna Karanamrita, which is a beautiful poem about the attachment to Krishna. And actually, when Lord Chaitanya travelled to South India, he very much liked the pastimes of Bilvamangala Thakur, and he actually very much liked the Krishna Karanamrita, in that he said that actually this is the teaching that I am teaching. Love for Krishna is everything. So we don't have to take that drastic a step as Bilvamangala Thakur, but the message is there. We have to be very serious about our spiritual life, very determined. And so we have to look at getting as the most association that we can possibly get. You know, and the elder devotees and great personalities will help you in that. So it's a wonderful process, this Krishna consciousness, and we have to really take to it in full strength and determination, and we will all reach our goal. It's interesting, as far as taking association of devotees, we have to be really mindful how we take association of devotees. We have to make sure that first and foremost we don't offend devotees. And sometimes we become a little flippant with senior devotees, and we have to be very mindful of that. Whether they are male or they're female, we have to be very, very mindful of who we're dealing with. And if we ever have a complaint about something that's happening within the temple, there are processes by which we go through to actually resolve any difficulties within Krishna consciousness. It's not that we necessarily have to approach someone ourselves, especially if we're a younger devotee and we see something that perhaps doesn't look right to us. It's not that we straight away approach a person on our own bat and say, "Hey, listen, what you're doing is wrong." It's better that we go to an authority and ask the authorities, "Is this okay?" So that way we're secure. We don't make any offences. Because these offences to Vaishnavas, offences to other devotees, is the greatest stumbling block to our determination. And we have to be very mindful. That we fall down to lusty desires or whatever, that can be one thing. But offences to a devotee is the greatest thing. We have to be really mindful of that. So if we're ever not sure on what is going on, or you think some irregularity is happening or something is not correct, you seek out an older devotee and you talk to the older devotee before approaching. Is that okay? So this is a wonderful pastime, and we can learn so much. So next time you're sitting there chanting or doing bhajan, Krishna's there. He wants to hear your bhajan. The purer we become, the more determined we become, the more enthusiastic we become in attaining the goal, Krishna will be there. So he dovetailed, Bilvamangala Thakur dovetailed this incredible, insatiable lust that he had for this girl and turned it around, and now I'm going to put that same thrust, that same energy into serving and loving Krishna. That's what we have to do. That's what we have to do. With great determination, wholehearted, full consciousness and full determination, and we will attain success in due course of time with the help and the grace of other devotees and Krishna. You know, they have that Western song, Amazing Grace. When you actually listen to the words of that, it is that. It's really that. How sweet a sound, the grace of, you know, my Lord, your grace. I won't sing it for you. But it's a wonder, if you listen to the lyrics, sometimes, you know, to go to a funeral or something, a Western funeral, and they play this Amazing Grace. That's what we live on. That's what we thrive on. That's what will help us. It's the grace of the senior devotees. It's the grace of our brothers and sisters. And it's the grace of Krishna himself. And you get that grace by worshipping and serving the Lord to the best of your ability. Every moment in the Lord's loving service. Utilizing every moment in the Lord's loving service. Any comments or questions at all, Prabhu? Yes, Prabhu? Yep. No, basically it's an allegory. It's just a story in that it's showing that, generally speaking, it's our propensity to blame someone else. You know, we don't take responsibility that quickly. Now what's happening here is that the king is waking up to the fact that he's wasted his life. In a sense, you know, like Bilvamangala Thakur also, when he realized, when he got that instruction from Chintamani, I mean, he didn't berate Chintamani. He didn't say, you know, well, why did I fall in love with you anyway? Well, why are you so beautiful that I became totally infatuated with you, you know? And a lot of people say that. You know, if you weren't so beautiful, I wouldn't have fallen in love with you. Ridiculous. So he... Yeah, yeah. So the point is, what happened is, when he realized the truth from Chintamani, then he praised Chintamani. I mean, actually, the first verse of the Krishna Karanamrita is praising Chintamani for waking him up. And so he took responsibility. How, you know? So we have to take responsibility. Yes, Prabhu?
I just wanted to say about that male, female.
Yeah. Absolutely, absolutely.
And one of the things I wanted to ask about in my mind, I noticed as I served in Angelo's temple here, there's no painting of what you're telling me on the billboard. I wonder if that's just forgotten or?
Oh, no, no, no. Yes, there is. That's a picture of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That one right here behind me. That's Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in a Leela pastime. And but we could have some more pictures of. Do you know someone that will paint a nice painting of Lord Chaitanya? Yeah, by all means. Yeah, yeah, we should. But I mean, Lord Chaitanya is also manifest, believe me, in the beautiful form of Gaur Nitai. They're the biggest brass deities in the world, and Prabhupada personally installed them. So, if you want to associate with Lord Chaitanya, and he is so merciful, he lets me even work with him, so pretty good. Yeah. Any other comments or questions at all, Prabhu? So, is that clear to you, Prabhu? Okay. Yeah.
Talking about how offences is one of the greatest stumbling block for our determination. Is there anything else that can get in the way of our determination?
Yeah, I mean, there's a list, there's endless little things. But the main thing is it's more beneficial to you to focus on the positives. You know, like Rupa Goswami is saying, those different things, perseverance, determination, wholehearted, you know, and association, they're more positive things. But there are many, many things. But the real setback that you'll get is if you criticize and if you offend devotees, because Krishna finds that very difficult to forgive. You know, because here you have someone that's dedicating their life and soul as to the best of their ability to serve the Lord, and who are you to come along and criticize their personality or upset them or disturb them in any way, shape or form? It's a big thing, you know, a big responsibility for us devotees not to disturb another person's spiritual life, you know, and you being negative or offensive to another devotee could open up a little crack in their Krishna consciousness. You know, they may become a little morose. And when there's a little crack in devotional service, Maya comes in. Sometimes, we've seen it in the past, you know, somebody may have offended a devotee, And the devotee feels, how could I have done that? And they go away, they become a little weak, and Maya's got them. You know, so, and now whose responsibility was that? Was that my responsibility because I offended them? And how does Krishna view that? You stop that person from coming to me. How much grace are you going to receive if you've done that? So you have to then go to that person and say, I've made a hell of a mistake. I'm so sorry that I've offended you. Please forgive me. I offer my obeisances to you. And then Krishna says, if you get the mercy from that person that you've offended, then you'll have my mercy again. So even if we're in a role of leadership, even if we're in a role of instructing, because there has to be instructing, Aniruddha Prabhu, Prabhu Das, they have to instruct at times. And sometimes it may not be that pleasant. They're not doing it to offend you. They do it in a way in which we will encourage you. So if you're in a point of leadership, you have to think of a way of actually helping a person and not being a detriment to their spiritual life. You have to be very, very careful with that. It is such a delicate thing for a person to even come to this temple, you know, just as an associate devotee is a wonderful thing. So we cannot in any way spoil that by being flippant, offensive, or negligent. We have to be so mindful to actually encourage, always, you know, bring out more, engage more every moment. Does that make sense to you, Prabhu? Yeah. Very, very important. You know, how could you live with yourself if you've offended someone and all of a sudden that was enough, that they were a little weak as it was, and that was enough for them to leave? Boy, I tell you, I'd feel pretty horrible. You know?
When you see people who are chanting also, you feel
deeply. What?
When you offend someone, you cannot be having a good chanting.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
You feel guilty.
Yeah. You know, you will get the grace of the Lord. Like even in that point, as far as being offensive to a devotee, but also in the point of actually, you know, your determination. If you are weakened at a particular point and there is some fall down, you know, to build yourself up again in a spiritual level, very hard to do. You lose energy. You know? These are the father-son discussions that I used to have with Bala. We're all growing up, you have to explain, you know, there's also a physical side to it. And you lose that connection with Krishna if you fall prey to lusty desires. And so you have to actually build that strength, and then you'll get that grace through chanting, through your service, through experience Krishna. Yeah. But offences also. If you're offensive and you're negative to your God brothers and sisters, not a loving spirit, you'll find it very difficult to actually get a taste from your devotional service. Most of the people that were incredibly critical and negative to other devotees that I've known are no longer devotees. So it's really not worth it. And so you should always have a loving, friendship, compassionate attitude to all your God brothers and sisters, even if someone is not exactly your cup of tea. They may not be the best, you know, the person that you perhaps get on with so well. Still, you always afford them all love and respect. Always. Never think ill, even in thought. You know, you may even have this whole thing about, oh, I got that temple president, he really irks me, I can't handle him. Again, don't you allow that thought into your mind. Look at what this person is doing. Look at the life that he's living. Look at the dedication and the service that he's done to Guru and Krishna. Don't you let that thought come in. Because if you let that thought come in, if you allow that sort of negative attitude in your consciousness, there's another crack for Maya. And she'll be in there like a shot. We have a big battle with Maya. It is not a minor thing. You cannot for one moment, not every moment, has to be in loving service to Krishna. And that means in relationship to the devotees as well. Did you have a question, John? Generally, again, it's by grace. Generally, you'll have somebody tell you. You may not be aware that you're offending somebody else. You may be, say for example, you may be a bit abrupt to the Matajis. You know, you're a new devotee, you're a little bit rah-rah, which has happened in the past, and you may be a bit abrupt to the Matajis and say, get me that, get me this. That sort of attitude is offensive to these great Vaishnavas. Instead of saying, Mataji, could you please get that for me? But in your neophyte or early stage of devotional service, you may be a bit snappy because you don't want to have anything to do with the ladies, perhaps. And that's fine, but you can still be polite. So some older devotee will come up to you and say, listen, John, don't treat the ladies like that. They're great Vaishnavas. Or vice versa. The ladies could also do that to the men. Hey, you, Prabhu, give me this. You know? So some older devotee will come up and tell you. Believe me, they will come and tell you. You have to be big enough then to say, oh, thanks, Prabhu. I appreciate that. I won't make that mistake again. And that's fine. And that's called grace. You know? We have to be really careful. You have a last question, Prabhu?
Absolutely.
We have to be really careful in our dealings with devotees. Very, very. If we got our goal, we have to be really mindful how we're going to achieve that goal. And just be nice with everybody, and you'll be okay. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki.